Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Here's the next big competition coming down the road, a $25 million prize to the builder of the first commercially viable 100-mile-per-gallon car. The crew that mounted the $10 million X-Prize for the first reusable private spacecraft is now looking to America's highways, at global warming, and at American cars that in 2007 averaged fuel consumption of 25 miles a gallon, no better than the ancient, clattering old Model T. They don't want a cramped gizmobile that makes you sit upside down and pedal with your feet. They want a real saleable car that brings a revolution in mileage. Up next on Point, the Automotive X Prize and the race for the 100-mile-per-gallon car. Joining me first today from Washington, D.C. is John Shore, Senior Director of the Automotive X Prize, the reported $25 million prize being put together by the X Prize Foundation. They backed the 2004 $10 million Ansari X Prize for the first private spacecraft to travel twice into space. John Shore, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be on the show.
It's great to have you. Let me say right off the bat, I know you don't have it all put together yet. You're out there building your own prize while everybody's talking about the car, but we want to help put some wind in your sails today, and everybody's excited about it. What are you trying to do here, John Shore?
Well, Tom, our goal is really simple. It's to inspire a new generation of viable, super-efficient vehicles that help break our addiction to oil and stem the effects of climate change. And we're going to do that by offering a really large cash purse that will be awarded to teams that win a stage race for these clean, production-capable vehicles that can exceed 100 miles per gallon equivalent fuel economy.
But it's not just a kidney bean on wheels with great solar wings that wouldn't work on the highways. You want something that would work on the highways, be bought, be able to be used in numbers.
That's absolutely right. We are not interested in what are called concept cars or science experiments. The phrase we use is production-capable. These need to be cars that are safe, that are manufacturable, that have a reasonable story of being able to succeed in the marketplace in significant quantities, and only then will they get in our stage race.
And what do you mean by 100 miles per gallon? Per gallon seems to suggest that the presumption of gasoline or biofuels. Are you necessarily saying it's got to be something pumped into a tank by the gallon?
Not at all. And the phrase miles per gallon is not a phrase we use. We use the keyword equivalent. So it's 100 miles per gallon equivalent. Mm-hmm. And by equivalent, we simply mean equivalent to the energy of gasoline. What we care about is how much energy went into the car, how far did the car go, and then we convert that energy into the equivalent amount of gasoline, because consumers are very familiar with the miles per gallon in the case of gasoline. And some of these cars will be powered by gasoline. But it could be electricity, it could be ethanol, it could be, who knows.
You got private folks into space with the $10 million Ansari X Prize for space travel. Who are the deep pockets behind this? Who's standing up or behind the X Foundation, behind this Automotive X Prize? What kind of, prize investors have you got lined up?
Well, prize investors is exactly the right phrase. The reason they're attracted to doing this is they see this as a wonderful way to leverage their money. To take the Ansari SpaceX Prize that you mentioned, that was a $10 million prize put up by the Ansari family. As a result of that, investors flocked to the table, invested around $100 million. The winners, Paul Allen and Bert Rutan, spent about $60 million. And then when it was all over, Richard Branson bought the rights, bought the technology for about $100 million. And there are now roughly five companies that are out there in the market trying to develop the space tourism business.
So I'm reading you've got people like Larry Page at Google, Craig Venter, who was big in genome sequencing, that kind of California money who's behind it?
That kind of California money. Your readers could go to our website and see the list of trustees and some of the major donors. But yeah, Larry Page and Craig Venter went to Peter Diamandis after the Space Prize was launched and proposed that we generalize this idea of prize philanthropy into it, not just for space, but for other fields. And the Automotive X Prize is the first example.
Business Week here reminding us that prizes have a long history. 1919, the Ortig Prize offered $25,000 for the first pilot to fly the Atlantic nonstop. 1919, Charles Lindbergh didn't win it until 1927. It took a long time. How long do you think it might take to get a prize winner for this challenge you're developing for the highways for cars?
Well, we expect to run our stage races in 2009 and award the prize in 2009 or 2010.
Stage race. What's that mean?
That means a long-distance, possibly even cross-country race, sort of like the Tour de France, where you have stages every day, perhaps multiple stages a day, and the whole point is to stress these cars in the same way that consumers drive their cars. So we'll have city stages, hill stages, commuting stages, run-errand stages, traffic simulation stages, you name it.
So we're talking about a lot of attention. If you get a race out there, you're going to have the cameras going. And what about, take us further into the requirements for the cars. You don't want a concept car, but beyond that, I mean, how many people does it have to seat? What is it? Is there some minimal requirement for size? Is there some maximum for weight? Or how do you envision it?
We expect to have two different classes of vehicles in the race. Roughly speaking, one is mainstream, aimed at the way in which people drive their cars today, basically the size, the number of passengers, and we'll have specific limits. For example, it's not set in stone yet. We're still developing these rules, but in the mainstream area, we're likely to be insisting on at least four people. We'll also have an alternative class that is more suited for experiments in how personal transportation is done. And there we'll relax the constraints considerably.
I want to go right now to somebody who's already been working on a high-mileage mobile. Steve Fambro joins us from Carlsbad, California. He's founder and CEO of Aptera Motors. Steve Fambro, thanks a lot for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So I'm looking here at a picture of your car, and I should say, for a gallery of images of lots of cars in this race, concept cars, road-ready cars, the Aptera. You can go to our website, onpointradio.org, and really get an eyeful. I'm looking here at yours, Steve, a very nifty-looking sort of moon rover space vehicle. Looks very sleek, very cool. You're already well above 100 miles per gallon, as I understand it, in what you're working on.
That's correct. Last October, we successfully tested the car in one of our many highway tests and achieved over 230 miles per gallon with the car configured as a pure diesel. Currently, right now, the car is all electric. That's more than likely the car, the first car that will be brought to production, a combination of either all electric or a base electric drive, and then possibly configured as a serial hybrid. But yes, we've already achieved that high number.
How many passengers can you get into this buggy?
Two passengers side by side with the same approximate interior side space and interior spacing between the passenger and driver as about a Honda Fit.
Okay, so as a car that's already on the market, John Shore, I don't know if you've seen the Aptera, but is this it? Is it already done? Three wheels, very sleek, ready to go on the road at 230 miles per gallon, says Steve.
Well, we hope they'll enter. It looks like a very interesting car. The only caution I would raise is that different people measure miles per gallon in different ways. I'm not doubting that the Aptera achieved the 200, but in our stage race, we'll have a lot of varied driving conditions and distances and driving types, and it'll be much more difficult to achieve 100 miles per gallon in that sort of a test. Also, the Aptera is a good example of a smaller vehicle that would be in our alternative class rather than the mainstream class.
Steve, you're already in the game here and working on this, and you're putting a business together here. We're going to look at technology, but there's also a business factor. You've built something here. Do you think the American public, the American business community is ready to embrace a super high-mileage car? After all, that's what it takes at the end of the day for it to really hit the roads in volume.
Sure. Well, I really think it takes two things. First off, it takes money. Second, it takes technology. Let me speak about money for a second. I left the biotech industry to start this company. I partnered with the co-founder, Chris Anthony. He's the founder of Epic Boats. We started this company because one of the things we realized is, besides the need for a vehicle, just like in the biotech space, there was a growing climate, a climate investment climate of clean tech, where money for these types of endeavors is easier to come by. And it was really within a few months after starting the business that we found our first investor, Idea Lab of Pasadena.
Yeah. So you've got that kind of concept investment, but what about the American public? Do you think they're ready to zip around in high-mileage Apteras or whatever else might win an Automotive X Prize?
Sure. There's always, with any new technology, of course, there's the requisite early adopters and visionaries. The question is, after that, how much of a need is there? We think there's a growing need, a growing concern with the American public in terms of not only the price of fuel, the price of oil, the environmental price, and just the general realization that it's a great energy source. Oil is incredibly energy dense, and it's very difficult to engineer anything like it. So we had better use it wisely. And I think a lot of people are starting to realize that.
Steve Fambro, founder and CEO of Aptera Motors, already out there building. Good luck to you, Steve. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
John, you remind us that something like 40% of the world's annual oil output goes to cars. So if we can quadruple in this country average mileage, if we could even begin to imagine that one day, that would be huge.
That's absolutely right. And we can also help by moving to some alternative fuels and displace the use of oil. It's going to take a wide variety of solutions to solve this problem. And we're hoping that the Automotive X Prize will sort of be a level playing field where all of these solutions can be tested and exposed to the public.
We've been joined from Washington by John Shore, Senior Director of the Automotive X Prize. They're looking to put together a big money prize. $25 million has been reported. They're still working on it, but it looks like it's going to happen to the first ones to meet their specs for a 100-mile-per-gallon car. I'm joined right now in the studio by John Haywood. He's professor of mechanical engineering and director of the Sloan Automotive Lab at MIT. He's paid a lot of attention to high-mileage vehicles and the technology and engineering challenges behind them. John Haywood, thanks a lot for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
So here we are. You know, the X Prize is very good at publicizing and building excitement around a goal, 100-mile-per-gallon car that could be, that would be commercially viable. Is that years away? Is that already in somebody's back pocket? How do you see it?
Well, 100-mile-per-gallon car, it's technically feasible. We can go way beyond that. We have these mileage marathons, competitions, where teams put a prototype vehicle together. How far can you drive on a gallon of gas? And they get up into the thousands.
But we see those, and they often look like kind of a kidney bean on stilts. You know, they don't look like something people might drive unless I'm just hopelessly out of date, John.
Of course. They're really motorized bicycles. Mm-hmm. They're not cars. You and I would be too cold in winter, too hot in summer.
Right.
We wouldn't have our friend beside us to mm-hmm. talk to. Mm-hmm. We'd be very uncomfortable and exposed. They would be slow.
But on the frontier, they're showing thousands possible. What about at that commercially viable level?
Well, they get people involved in this issue, and they explore the possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, come to 100 miles per gallon. During the 1990s, the government here sponsored a program called PNGV, a Partnership for a New Generation of Vehicles. And the auto companies put together supposedly real-world prototypes that got 80 miles per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty close to 100, and a few years ago, so we could do better. But these vehicles, these 80-mile-per-gallon standard-size cars,
yeah,
they would be very expensive. They were very sophisticated technology. And the question was, all right, if you want 80 or 100-mile-per-gallon in a real car, can you do it at affordable cost, acceptable performance, meet comfort, convenience requirements? Can you do all of these things at once? And the answer was then, not really.
What made them so expensive, these concept cars that were way up in the high mileage? Why so expensive?
Well, they were expensive because to get to those numbers, 80, 100 miles per gallon, you needed a really efficient engine, an efficient transmission,
okay,
lightweight vehicle, if you wanted the same size as today's standard car.
And what that means, the materials required for that lightweight and for that efficiency were expensive to mine, to forge, to...
They are much more expensive than the materials we use today. Lots of things are possible. Cars can get better. We can drive less big cars. Those are all very important issues. And John Shore mentioned this, that there's going to be a wide range of solutions will have to come together to make this real. But we got to acknowledge that it will take all of this, and we've also got to acknowledge that the cars we have today, the fuels we use, the industry that produces these vehicles, how we use them, we've had decades and decades to, let's say, get it right.
Yeah.
We've got what we want.
for ease,
convenience,
but not
speed.
for energy independence, not for global warming, not for one day, surely, when prices spike up, not for economy.
Of course.
And they've already spiked.
Of course. And that's becoming clear to those of us in the business who are looking ahead and saying, well, can we change the way we travel? And yes, we can, but we got to be willing to do it. And so I think coming back to how John Shaw set up his rules in outline, talking about this being a viable, and I think he said sort of mainstream standard vehicle,
yeah.
It's good that we see how far we can go with those objectives because we've got to transition bit by bit.
So one of the ingredients, though, will be public willingness to actually morph their tastes a little bit. John Shaw, do you feel the readiness out there to do that? Is it going to be a strange experience for people to step into 100-mile-per-gallon car?
I think there's a clear readiness. In polls that ask consumers what are some of the important reasons they have today when they shop for a car, fuel economy is rising rapidly on that list. We did our own poll late last year and found that 81% of the public, this is a national poll, said 81% said 100-mile-per-gallon cars within 5 years is very important. And we think that the market is moving in this direction and that we will provide a big spotlight and a big playing field to expose solutions to the public. I think the public's ready for this.
Let's hear a little bit from the public. From Malone, New York, Michael is calling in. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Great.
My wife and I purchased a Honda Civic Hybrid last June, and it's just a wonderful car, and it does very well. It doesn't do as well as, you know, the 50 miles that they say, but it approaches that if you drive it properly. And, you know, it's very attractive with the zero pollution and the, the sense that you're doing something for the environment as well as, reducing the amount of fuel that you use.
And did it make you change your expectations on legroom, on power, on performance? Was that a problem, an issue at all?
We had test driven a Prius, the Toyota.
Yep.
And it was not as normal a car. It just seemed to be too strange, and it looks different, like the Honda Insight, the earlier the prototype they had. And it had, of course, that steering mechanism defect that kind of made us glad we hadn't bought it. And when you get in the Civic, it's no different than the other Civic, apart from the back seat not flopping down. And
You go. You're happy with it.
It doesn't drive any differently than a regular conventional car.
But there's a vote for diving in and doing it. Also, that sensitivity to differences that may be there. John Haywood, look with us for a second at some of the basics of the technology here to get into this really high area. First, at the body of the car, carbon fiber likely instead of aluminum, steel, current common components?
That's one of our several options. Michael, you like your hybrid, good. And I think you said something important. You said drive it properly. That's a big piece of this. If we can get our driving to be less aggressive, we will all save fuel. So that's very good.
I mean, that's another ingredient here. We have to have a less heavy foot on the accelerator.
Less heavy foot.
A lot of this is coming down on us instead of the technology. Oh, dear.
We can survive that. What we really want to do is get from A to B. And yes, we want to get there reasonably fast, but stoplights, other traffic, all this stuff slows us down. But hybrids are indeed a promising technology. They offer something new. For example, they capture energy when we brake and feed that back into the batteries.
Mm-hmm.
You can turn the engine off at idle. It saves a surprising amount of gas. So it's a good technology. The problem is it costs quite a bit more. A couple of thousand dollars, $2,000-$3,000 more. And until that price difference gets reduced, maybe the market is limited in how fast it'll grow. But it's a very good technology, and it's good that it's out there. So hybrids is one option. Mm. Better standard engines is another option. Lightweight materials, taking weight out of the vehicle. More efficient transmissions. They've improved significantly.
What about safety if you have lighter weight materials in these high-mileage cars? Is there a safety issue?
That can be dealt with because the how safe a vehicle is if you're hit depends on many things. And we've got choices. Obviously, Europe, Japan, Asia, they drive much smaller vehicles. We can keep safety where we want it. We can deal with that one.
Let me take a call from Pella, Iowa. Jim, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Great, thanks. Jim, what do you know?
Well, here's the question here. I hate to sound paranoid on this, but are there any plans, once the technology is developed that's commercially reproducible,
yep,
to keep it out of the hands of existing manufacturers who may indeed have quite significant incentives to, shall we say, change it quite a bit?
You mean you don't want Detroit to pick it up? Wouldn't you want the American auto industry to embrace it and build it if it's popular and effective?
I'd rather see somebody with fresh eyes and less deep pocketbooks go after it.
Ooh, there's some skepticism about what we've got going on right now. Let's turn for an answer to that, and thanks, Jim, for your call. Let me go to Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Micheline Mickey Maynard. She's Detroit Bureau Chief for the New York Times. She covers the automotive industry, author of The End of Detroit and Collision Course. Mickey Maynard, thanks a lot for being with us.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You hear our caller in Iowa saying he's not so sure that if the big three bought the technology, they would actually build it or, you know, build it most effectively. What is Detroit's attitude here? They've got some of their own concept cars that are very high mileage. Are they raring to go or holding back?
Well, there's kind of a mixed message here because all of the Detroit car companies have been exploring this technology for years. In fact, Daimler Chrysler, the parent of Chrysler, has a joint venture to look into this kind of technology. GM is working on an electric car, a new one called the Chevrolet Volt, and Ford for years has been working on these high mileage vehicles. But, you know, that's where, to use a phrase, practicality collides with the business case because, you know, just look at sport utility vehicles. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why the car company sold all those SUVs is that they made $4,000 and up in profits on these vehicles. A small car generates about $400 in profits. So they essentially have to sell 10 small cars to make the profits that they do on an SUV. To them, everything is the business case first and other issues after that.
So when President Bush has argued that increasing the mileage standards, federal standards, to more than 40 miles per gallon, let alone 100, but the president said to go beyond 40 would break the auto industry and throw a lot of people out of work. Is that the Detroit view, Mickey?
Well, the president's one of the president's proposals is just a 10% improvement. I'm sorry, 20% reduction in use of foreign oil over 10 years. And under that proposal, we actually see a 4 mile per gallon increase by about the end of this decade in fuel economy. And the car companies are saying that even that 4 mile per gallon increase would cost them collectively about $50 billion. So we're seeing sort of some rumblings just about a modest increase, let alone up to 40 miles per gallon, and the current standard is about 27.5 miles per gallon.
John Shore, is your automotive XPRIZE then, I don't know, a kind of a stone in the sling of a little David that would bring down Detroit's Goliath?
Well, we hope that lots of companies will compete, ranging from Detroit big companies to the newcomers, and maybe it will be looking like David versus Goliath on this huge playing field that we're establishing. But we think that having the newcomers, giving them an opportunity to show what their capabilities are in a very dramatic way before the public, can help to break down the barriers that newcomers face when they're trying to compete in this marketplace. And I think also give the big car companies an opportunity to show that they're serious about making a change in this direction.
Bring it on, 100 miles per gallon. John Haywood, you've got, of course, some automakers out there already with the hybrids, Toyota, Honda, others, who are already pushing the miles per gallon. Do you see, if not Detroit, then other big automakers, current or coming on stream, that are economically positioned to dive in and do this?
I connect a lot with people in the industry. It's part of my work. I do research, look at new opportunities in this field. I talk to people in the industry a lot, all over the place. It's very competitive right now. You've only got to read the financial pages as they talk about the many of the auto companies' plights, their situation.
In Detroit, hemorrhaging billions and billions.
It's very competitive. They have to have good products that the public wants. So they're trying really hard to improve the technology. But I'd say, let me throw out two ideas that I think are important. One is reality. What a car has to do is very demanding. And people who are not in the business often don't realize that. It has
we
to,
just turn the key and expect it to take us wherever we like.
We turn the key, it's got to start right away. The startup time target is 0.2 seconds, so you never notice. It's got to work from 0 Fahrenheit all the way up to 100 Fahrenheit.
Are those hard, difficult things for a 100 mile per gallon car?
Well, it means the technology's got to be very robust and perform well. And so it's really demanding. The 150,000 miles is the typical total mileage. So it's very demanding. I'm involved with a new idea that we are working with auto companies and the petroleum industry to try and get developed. And even we, who are deeply involved in this, are realizing it's not as easy as it seems. What people want and how they want that to perform, how good the vehicle has to be, we've got used to extremely good cars.
Maybe more in terms of performance and ease than we can expect from 100 miles per gallon. Mickey, I see here the Volt you were talking about. It's GM's, right?
Yes.
And I mean, this doesn't look like a kidney bean on wheels. This looks like a kind of a muscle car, a Dodge Charger kind of thing on steroids. Very high mileage in concept.
They probably prefer that you say a Corvette.
Okay, but I mean, this looks like a muscle car, not a thin diet here. Does it really work? Is there a chance of using it?
I think that's the problem, is that this is basically a plug-in hybrid. It's a hybrid electric vehicle that you would plug into the wall to charge. And the battery technology for this does not yet exist in a commercial form for an automobile. So, in fact, General Motors got a great deal of attention for this car at the Detroit Auto Show. And just a couple of weeks ago, they had sort of an update press conference here in Detroit where they said, you know, we got everybody's expectations up a little bit high, and we acknowledge that the technology isn't there yet. So please don't everybody start placing orders at dealerships for the Volt, because we can't build it yet.
John Shore, so there you've got a beautiful concept car with no battery that will let it achieve what it sets out to. And you hear John Haywood saying you've got some real challenges to build anything like what people are currently, by and large, willing to drive.
So I agree with John. One of the things we've learned in the development of this prize is building a car that could actually go on sale and be successful today is a huge undertaking, and most people underestimate it. But that's why we have so many rules in place in the design of this prize, to try to make sure that the cars that end up on our big playing field have a realistic chance.
Mm. Let's turn to our callers. Gene from Moline, Illinois. Gene, you're on the air.
I own a bicycle with a motor, and it has a Honda motor, and I'm averaging about 240 miles per gallon with it.
A bicycle, 240 miles per gallon. How is that in February, January, March in Moline, Gene?
That is my problem with it. although it's great in the summer, it is not too good in the winter. I also own a Honda Civic normally aspirated engine, and I'm averaging about 36, which I'm told is better than most people are getting with their hybrids.
So you're an early adopter here. You're reaching for that high mileage. Do you think your fellow Moliners or others would do the same?
Not unless they can get it in the standard package of a regular car that gets has the good heater and everything.
Right. That's back to that comfort and familiarity issue. Gene, good luck with that. 240 miles per gallon, that's great on a bike. Let's go to Ridge Springs, South Carolina, and Lee. Lee, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question is, why is nobody touting diesel except for an earlier guest that you had on? I have a diesel Jetta. This is my fourth or fifth, I guess. We drove Jetta's Rabbits, actually, in the 1970s.
Yeah.
This is a really nice car. I get 50 miles to the gallon. I'm told that when clean diesel comes along next year, I'll get 60 miles to the gallon. That's a whole lot better than any hybrid. And my car holds actually more stuff than my Jeep, my Grand Cherokee Jeep, which gets 18 miles to the gallon on the road. and it's a comfortable car.
So you're driving diesel and you're getting it already. Let me put that to Mickey Maynard. Mickey, a lot more diesel, I think, in Europe than in the U.S. Is that a
path
to super mileage?
Absolutely. I think something like 80% of the cars sold in France are diesel engines. Diesel's very big in Europe. Europe actually has stricter standards on diesel than we do. I do believe within 5 years we'll see diesel technology spreading more widely among the Detroit car companies. Honda is working on its own diesel engine. I think Toyota will have to work on a diesel engine as well.
John Haywood, talk to us about fuel sources. Can diesel take us to the promised land of super mileage, or is it a way station? What will it still be oil that we're talking about when we're up in the 100-mile-per-gallon vehicle range here, or does it ultimately have to be something else? We talk about hydrogen and you name it. What about fuel sources?
Well, way station's a good phrase. Diesel fuel comes today from petroleum, and it's comparable to gasoline. By the way, for our caller, your 50 mile per gallon, you got 10% more energy in a gallon of diesel fuel than you do in a gallon of gasoline.
There's a piece of it right there. Yeah.
And diesel is a promising technology. Gasoline engine technology is starting to catch up on diesel as the technical people in the business try to improve it. Mm. So we've got better gasoline engines. We've got diesel. We've got the hybrids. We've got this plug-in version of the hybrid where some of the energy comes from the electric grid. So our driving is partly petroleum-based and partly electricity-based.
But that electricity may have petroleum behind it.
Well, in this country, it would have coal and natural gas behind it, and some nuclear power and some other choices. Mm-hmm. But if we look long term, that may be what we have to do. And then, Tom, you mentioned hydrogen and fuel cells, which is another technology option for
President
the longer
Bush talks
term.
About.
And
mm-hmm.
we've got a major government program to try and develop that technology. Will that be attractive? Maybe. It depends how successful our developments are, how we can bring the cost down, and can we think of good ways to make and distribute hydrogen? There are a lot of questions about where we're going to end up, particularly if you look 30, 40, 50 years ahead.
John Shore, when you look at technology issues, fuel is one of them. Also, you know, what is it going to be made of? The tires, the design. What directions are you looking in, anticipating 100 miles per gallon?
Well, we don't prejudge where the technological advances will come from, but as you point out and as others have pointed out, the aerodynamics, the materials, the weight, the efficiency of the powertrain, the electronics and the fuel management and the power management, the tires, it's very hard to predict where the key technological advance will come from, and we try not to do that. We try to make the design of the Automotive XPRIZE to be technology neutral so that any promising technology can sort of come to the foreground and contribute.
John Haywood, you do look at the technology. Take us through some of these. For example, tires, just to start with, very important when it gets to a higher mileage?
All the things you mentioned, all these pieces are important. Yes, there already exist lower friction tires. And some people say that one of the best things we could do short term is mandate their use, so when everybody changes their tires, which they'll do within the next 3 or 4 years, the entire fleet would transition to low friction, improve mileage by a few percent. Now, a few percent may not sound very much, but the few percents add up, and we've got to go at this bit by bit. So better tires, more aerodynamic shapes.
Does that mean a different genre of styling would have to predominate if we were up in the high mileage zone? Would everything look radically different in design from now?
I'm sure many of your listeners go to car museums because they're fun. You can see what was a car like in the 50s and the 60s. Mm-hmm. And when I think about that, lots of things in the styling stick out that gives it features.
The big,
today,
boxy...
Well, the fins and the other fancy stuff, that added drag. Mm-hmm. Today's cars are remarkably smooth. But the car of the future, the side mirrors we have, which, of course, we use a lot and like,
yes,
they're a source of drag. They would come off when we get tiny cameras and we'd have TV screens where we'd see what was beside us. Mm-hmm. Now, do we want that? Those are the kind of issues that are going to come up as we try and put all these technologies together. So it's better everything: engine, transmission, lighter weight, materials, tires, aerodynamics, and we've got to start thinking smaller size.
I should say again, you can see images of a lot of the cars on the drawing boards and more than that now at our website, onpointradio.org. They're really interesting. Check them out. Susie is calling from Leverett, Massachusetts. Susie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
We have a new Honda Civic Hybrid, which we absolutely love, and I'm just picking up on what an earlier caller said about changing your driving habits. Our hybrid has really changed the way we drive our standard vehicle as well, because we can, of course, see the mileage. And I was thinking that, you know, why couldn't we just put a mileage gauge in every car so that, you know, other people could change their driving habits.
I mean, so you could see at every moment what kind of mileage you were getting and realize the cost of stepping on the gas,
right,
that kind of
exactly.
thing. Well, how about it? Mickey Maynard, can you imagine Detroit, you know, putting that right in there so that every minute of every drive you can see how low your mileage actually is?
Well, you know, I actually have that on. I have a Lexus RX, and you can go to a screen that shows you your mileage. And General Motors, in fact, has an engine that will adjust from 4-cylinder to 6-cylinder to 8-cylinder. I drove it on the Chevrolet Impala, and it does flash your miles per gallon right in front of you. So there is a lot I think people can do, but they pick up driving habits as teenagers. They sort of hone them as young adults, and there are a lot of people that have really never been taught to drive to maximize fuel economy. So that's one area that definitely could improve.
Let alone just buying your Hummer with its, what, 10, 11 miles per gallon. I mean,
Well, that's another issue, and it actually might be less than 10 or 11 miles per gallon.
Drinking it right down. Let's go to Jamie in Bolton, Massachusetts. Hi, Jamie. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. I'm a student at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and as an EMT, we use the public vehicles available to the workers, and one of them is the hybrid Prius. And as a 20-year-old, I think it stinks.
Why?
I want a car that zips. I want a car that looks cool.
But I know all kinds of people who drive Priuses, and they just rave about them. It doesn't flip your trigger?
It just doesn't. The second I let go of the accelerator, it seems to stop. I don't know. I've been driving my father's Lincolns my whole life. I'm used to the big V8, and it just doesn't do it for me.
Jamie, you're supposed to be the next generation worried about, you know, boiling to death on the globally warming planet, no?
Oh, I know, and the funny thing is, I'm an earth sciences major as well, so I know exactly what's happening to our world. But as a good reflection of the next generation of buyers, I just don't see it feasible right now with what's available. That someone that's 25, just got a new job, is looking for a new car, is going to go straight to the Prius, no matter how conscious they are.
Wow.
It just isn't doing it for me.
Okay, we hear it. Let me put it to Mickey Maynard. Mickey, I'm sure the marketers in Detroit have their ears wide open to that. 20 years old, wants that performance, please. Thank you.
Well, don't forget that half of the market is women, and that women actually value fuel economy, safety, and reliability above styling. So they might not appeal to 20-year-olds like your caller, but there might be a market for these vehicles. In fact, I'm pretty confident that there will be.
Let's get another call from Southbury, Connecticut. Richard, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Just a comment on the previous caller regarding mileage display. I think the displays also ought to display dollars per mile and dollars per day. Very easy. I mean, just plug in whatever you're paying for the gas, and out it pops at you. You spent, you know, $5 today on gas.
You think that'll be more persuasive than an environmental argument?
I think both of them can be displayed. You don't have to, it has to be either one or the other. No, you can have both. Very easy. But my point that I want to make here, the design criteria for this car, I think in terms of categories, ought to be, one, a city car. This is somebody that's driving in city, maybe less than 20 miles for a total trip. And the other one would be for a country car. We have so many people out there in the Midwest and the West where you're driving, you know, commuting 100 to 200 miles a day.
So maybe two different cars for two different purposes. Of course, then we have to build two different cars with its own requirements. But I hear it. Richard, thanks for calling. Let's listen for just a moment to some unusual testimony on Capitol Hill today. Former Vice President Al Gore, of course, has made a big splash on global warming with his movie An Inconvenient Truth. And he was back in Washington today, very rare appearance, telling congressmen there at a committee meeting that they had a choice in their approach to the issue of global warming. He said, in the future, people will say Congress refused to act on the evidence, or he said they'll ask,
How did they find the uncommon moral courage to rise above politics and redeem the promise of American democracy and do what some said was impossible and shake things up and tell the special interests, okay, we've heard you and we're going to do the best we can to take your considerations into account, but we're going to do what's right.
Al Gore today on Capitol Hill. John Shore, there's the environmental argument. Are you trying to make that with your Automotive X Prize, or just put the prize money out there and whatever motivation people have, let them ride it?
We are trying to make that argument. We're trying to do two things. One is reduce the amount of oil we use, and second, to stem the effects of climate change. They're quite linked. If we use less oil, we'll burn less oil, we'll put less carbon in the atmosphere. And one of the things we're going to do in our prize is to highlight the carbon emissions and the climate effects of the cars that are entered in the race.
Have you made any kind of calculation, if Americans could one day adopt 100-mile-per-gallon car, what difference would that make in overall carbon emissions in this country?
It's very hard to make those calculations precisely. Even people who are experts argue at great length about the proper assumptions. So like John Haywood's point, that even a few percent actually adds up to a huge change in the amount of carbon that is released in the atmosphere. So we try not to stake our prize on specific promises about the amount of reduction. We know that any reduction at all, and we hope these cars will make significant reductions, will be very helpful.
I'm seeing here John Haywood Transportation accounting for maybe 27% of U.S. energy usage. Does that sound right to
yes.
you?
And private vehicles, cars, SUVs, pickup trucks, that's about 60% of that. But I think John Shore is right. First of all, something like this prize competition highlights what we can do and why we need to do it. And it will make a difference, because if we current miles per gallon on average with these private vehicles is some 20, 25 miles per gallon, maybe 20 in real world use. If we double or triple that in some way, that's enormous, because growth in our car fleet is going to take some of the benefits away. But we can do a lot if we all, that's me and you and all our listeners, decide the end goal matters and we can still have the transportation that we want, but it won't be certainly as big and heavy.
There's a challenge. Build the technology and build the readiness to use it. Mickey, you watch Detroit. Where do you think this? Someone's going to win this prize sooner or later. We'll see what the exact rules are as they unfold. What's your guess about where the builder of the first commercially viable 100-mile-per-gallon car comes from? Do you think it'll be from Detroit or from Carlsbad or who knows where?
Well, I think it will probably be Tokyo, followed by one of the Detroit car companies. If you think about the Prius, Toyota made a decision in 1996 to go ahead and try to build a hybrid electric vehicle that would be commercially viable. The Prius came out a couple of years later, and it really took until the middle of this decade to catch on as a vehicle that everyone feels comfortable in and recognizes. So really, there's about a 10-year lag in things like this, from sort of the doubting to acceptance to wide enthusiasm. I do think someone will someday build a vehicle commercially viable that gets 100 miles per gallon, and I don't think we'll see it anytime soon, but I do think maybe by 2020 it'll be on the road.
John Shore, do you have applicants piling in already or trying to? Where are they? What kind of people? Grease monkeys in the garage? Big companies? What are you seeing?
We're seeing all of the above. Even though we haven't announced the prize formally, we are out there in a public way talking about the prize. We've had over 1,000 individuals, small companies, and large companies come to us expressing interest, ranging from the garage guy who's got a great idea about a new battery or some new engine component, all the way up to the big car companies that are quite engaged with us in talking about the prize and considering whether or not they should enter.
Well, it's exciting, and we're glad you've put it out there for people to aim at. It's terrific, and we appreciate it. Your time laying it out for us today, John Shore at the Automotive X Prize. John, thanks very much. Good luck with the competition.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate the opportunity.
John Haywood at the Sloan Automotive Lab at MIT, thanks for your work and for being with us.
My pleasure.
And Mickey Maynard at the New York Times. Mickey, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.